So what does this subtle beast of the field say? What is his response to Eve when she responds to him, "Thou shalt not surely die"? And yet, all of mankind has been paying a price for that ever since. She saw him most likely as a beautiful beast. She saw him in his colors and in his glory, and saw him not for what he was, but looking on the outward, looking at the things outwardly as he came to them in the garden. And he simply said in verse 1, "You shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Question. That's not what God said. You see, he baits her with questions. He baits her with foolish and unlearned questions. And when she responds, and then he says in verse 3, or rather verse 4, "Ye shall not surely die. For God know that in the day, doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." It was for her destruction. Him being subtle, he did not announce his intentions. When he came to Eve, she had no idea what his motive was, what his purpose was. But as soon as she responded to him, she'd already fallen in his snare. Thus we see for the first time in the Word of God that term subtle. To desire to cause harm, to scheme to cause harm, yet always hiding that intention. Somebody comes running at you, shaking their fist, screaming at you. You possibly have an idea. You've wronged them. Maybe they're going to do you harm. It's pretty obvious. It's outward. But when they come with a smile on their face, and even as David spake, I believe, of Ahithophel, and of course prophesying of Jesus Christ and Judas Iscariot, you know, "My friend, this man that ate at my table, ate meat with me, a man that was my counselor, a man I shared with, a man that I spent time with, a man that I knew well, my own familiar friend." And yet he never announced his intentions. He came subtly and had evil intentions and evil planning on his mind, but he never made that known. We see that culminate in the next man, which some of you are very familiar with, in 2 Samuel chapter 13. And we'll probably park here for a few moments with the Lord's help. But I want you to think about being subtle. Maybe in your own lifetimes, you've been subtle. You've approached people and not been upfront, not been honest. And there's even folks that you wanted to harm because of your subtlety. You're going to do them great harm, but yet you hide the knife in the folds of your garment, and you hide the dagger, rather, in the folds of your garment. You hide your maliciousness. You grab them by the beard and kiss them, and when you do it, you plunge the dagger into them. Why? Because you're subtle. And we see such a man in 2 Samuel 13, and I preach this passage probably as much as I preached any passage, because I believe it's very applicable to all of us, but especially to young people. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister, Tamar, for she was a virgin. And Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. But what happened? He had a friend. He thought it hard to do anything to her. He had a friend. Do you remember those days as a child? You would have never imagined stealing, let alone stealing from someone you love. Remember as a child, you would never imagine hurting the people you love, your parents, your grandparents, even brothers and sisters. You might punch them in the nose, but you'd never think to do them harm. But then as life smacks you in the face, and the reality of life comes upon you, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the position where someone now has come to you, and someone has snuck into your life unawares. They call them, he says he had a friend. This is someone that he, in the king's palace, was entrusted with, someone that he's obviously his family trusted him with. He was a friend to Amnon. His name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab, the Bible says, was a very subtle man. Second time in the Bible we see that word subtle used. Why is Jonadab subtle? He does not announce his intentions. I want to say along this lines, Amnon has no idea what is about to befall him because of one simple word, friend. I wouldn't speculate how long the friendship had gone on or how the friendship was forged. And I realize there's, as you grow up in life, you realize there's very few friendships based on truths. Most friendships are temporal at best because truth separates and truth divides. And, yes. And most friendships, can I say this, a lot of friendships need to be abolished. Yes, a lot of friendships we ought not to have. But now a friend who is a subtle man has come into his life at a time when he is vexed, a time when he doesn't know what's going on, he doesn't understand some things. He's obviously at least at minimum, and just I'm going to talk some plain talk tonight, but you all can handle it. Probably some watching can, but he's pubescent. You know, he is longing for this girl. He has seen her. He is desiring her. It has vexed him, and his friend picks up on that. Not a bad thing if his friend were not a subtle man, but he's a subtle man. He would destroy him and not think twice. He will make sure that his influence over him destroys him, and he'll never again think about it, about what he's done to Amnon. And this is what he tells him to do. In verse 4, and he said unto him, why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me? That's why a fool speaketh all of his heart. There's things you don't tell people.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's things people don't need to know about your life. I see these young ladies pouring their hearts out to young men. Foolishness. Mm-hmm. Foolishness. I see middle-aged ladies pouring their hearts out to middle-aged men or older men, younger men. Why? Because they just feel like they got to tell everything. It's foolishness. Why? Because subtle men lying in wait will grasp that information and use that information and turn against you with all subtlety. All the while being your friend. And this is what he counsels him to do. When Amnon says in verse 4, unto him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And Jonadab said unto him, lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight that I may see it and eat it at her hand. What is he saying? Send for her, have her come, have her enter into your, and by the way, when you cross up a young lady with a young man who's burning and you get them alone and you give them opportunity and you feed him literally, what's the process of life? He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's saying. He won't just come out and say it. He just gives him instruction to put him in a position where he can do what he was going to do. And that's what subtle people do. The serpent didn't hand Eve the fruit. Didn't hand her the meat of the tree. No. He didn't hand it to her. He just prepared her to make the decision herself. How did he bait her? With lust. You'll be as gods. How does Jonadab bait Amnon? He just feeds on his lust. He sets him up according to his lust. We see that all three places, lust is the driving force, how a subtle person can creep into your life. Listen, in all three places, we don't see them come put it in the hand. They don't force them. They don't even cajole them or pressure them. They just feed the lust and accommodate the lust. So he gives them instruction how to get the young lady to come into him. He tells him how to go to his father and use his father to get her to come in. What father is going to deny his son when he's sick? What father is going to deny his son when he's hurting? What father is going to deny his son when he sees him as he is vexed? Later on, Tamar tells him, my father would not withhold me from thee. If you want me, just ask him. You don't have to force me. You know, no such thing ought to be done in Israel. You don't have to do it this way. But you see, he had a friend. He was a subtle man. His parents missed it. Those that could have protected him missed it. And he himself missed it. He came to destroy him. He came to hurt him. It was more than just mischief. He was going to destroy his soul. And again, we'll see all three times we see this word used, we see the destruction of the soul, the death of the soul. You see, when subtlety comes, the purpose of it is to destroy. It is to kill. The influence of friends on us is probably one of the greatest tools that Satan has used over the years to destroy people, young and old alike. I was one of those young people, and I'm not going to try to talk too much about myself tonight, but I was one of those young people. I did not have a backbone. I admired those that did, but I didn't know how to have a backbone. Nobody taught me how to be a man. I was a little chicken. When people would come to me and pressure me or challenge me, I couldn't tell them no. I couldn't take a stand. I didn't have the backbone to do it. And so I myself was very vulnerable to the influence of people. A friend that is subtle, and it may, listen, they don't always realize they're being subtle. They don't realize that they're going to destroy you. Oftentimes, they're trying to get you to enjoy the pleasures of sin that they enjoy, not understanding that the wages of sin is death. Oftentimes, they'll try to get you to take part of something that they find pleasure in. It is very short term, because there is pleasure in sin for a season. And short term, they'll find something to try to please you, to find pleasure in. And it will short term bring pleasure. But at the end of that pleasure is destruction.
Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
Did he find pleasure in this woman? Let's read on. In verse 6, so Amnon lay down and made himself sick. This is the king's son, King David, his son. Made himself sick, and when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar my sister come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat at her hand. Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he laid it down, and she took flour and kneaded it, and made cakes in his sight, and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And look where Amnon goes wrong. And Amnon said, Have out all men from me, and they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thine hand. And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon her brother. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come lie with me, my sister. And she answered him, nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. She tells him, you can have me, but wait. Just wait. Don't be a fool. Don't be foolish. Can I say this real plain? You want a woman? You want a man? Wait.
Yes.
Just wait. How much better it is if you wait. How much better it is if you just wait on God and wait for the right woman and the right man and can go to the marriage bed pure and undefiled before God. How much better it is. She said, the king will give me to you. But don't be a fool. See, he's listening to a man who's subtle. He's already made up his mind, as fools do. And he's already made up his mind. Nobody's going to change his mind. In verse 14, howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. And look at verse 15. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. Don't raise your hands, but how many of you ladies have had to counsel a young lady who was in that same position? How many have had to counsel a young lady who was in that same place? Homecoming night, prom night, date night. Some fumbling fool in the backseat of the car in the movie theater. Tells her he loves her, convinces her he loves her, tells her all the sweet words she wants to hear. Steals her virginity, ruins her life, wrecks her body, throws her aside like a piece of meat. What do? They still go to prom. They still go to the homecoming. They still crawl in the car with boys. They still go in the darkened movie theater. They still look for empty buildings and empty places. And time again, because of peer pressure, because of the subtlety of ungodly, wicked people, that little girl feels pressure. That little girl feels peer pressure. As your pastor says, she just has to get rid of it. Throws it away. I was yelling pretty early on in this COVID crisis. It got stirred up in me. At that time, Pennsylvania had 50-some, maybe 60-some deaths. And they're just, I mean, it's all over the news. People are flipping out, going crazy. And I just sent out a reminder to people. Last year, Pennsylvania killed 13,500 babies.
That's right.
Murdered them.
Sure did.
The little state of Pennsylvania, 13,500 babies murdered. Worldwide, something like 220 million babies. And by the way, that's since they've been keeping legalized abortion numbers. That doesn't include, you know, through the years of apostate churches and through the years of religious controlled communities, the years of ungodliness and wickedness. That's since they've been keeping the numbers of legalized abortions throughout the world. Close to 250,000 babies. If God destroyed the population of the world, he'd be just.
Yes, sir.
If God killed us all, he'd be holy. And that blood crying out from the ground of those unborn, those that were slain in the womb, those that were murdered in the womb, cries out from the ground. And so often, more often than not, it's just because of an illicit relationship. It's not because of a forced relationship. And it is often, don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but more often than not, It's a willing relationship. And the boy talks the girl into something different, or talks her in, or she's, neither one has taken what they call precautionary measures. They've not followed the CDC guidelines for precaution. And what ends up, she ends up with, they call it an unwanted pregnancy. So what does she do? She goes to the doctor and says, I have a cure. I'll help your career. You can say what you want, I'm pretty convinced that some of them have come out publicly and talked about it. They brag about it on national television. Most of these Hollywood harlots and most of these, especially these putrid congresswomen, these big mouth congresswomen that want to destroy America, most of them have lived that life for many years. You know why? Because a baby's not going to ruin my career. An unwanted child's not going to ruin my career. And someone has talked them in to things that will destroy them, things that will absolutely defile them, things that will ruin them. And then somebody talks them into going and getting rid of that child by murdering that child in the womb. And it seems to be okay. Why? Because everybody else is doing it. All the girls in school are doing it. Everybody in my class, it seems like, has had at least one abortion, maybe two abortions. Hey, it's only $300. Buy one, get one free coupon. And it's so flippant today. Why? Because of subtle people who've come in, they just change the words, they change the picture, they change what it really is. And so many people have bought into that, that it's just okay. And it's murder. And it always will be. How do you get hooked on drugs? Because somebody one day says, hey, I got something for you. You don't just figure it out on your own. You went out in the field one day and saw this funny looking stinky plant, 6 to 8 foot high, 5-pronged leaves, and these really smelly, nasty, greasy buds on it, and thought, you know what, that looks like something interesting to smoke. They used to chew it. They figured out, you know, that doesn't work. Let's smoke it. Now the whole world's high on marijuana. Westcott Horton, their cronies sure were.
Sure were. Yes, sir.
That hasn't changed. A man just told me recently, he said, man, I had to quit the chronic. I said, why is that? He said, man, they P-test me at work. And I said, well, I guess that's a pretty good reason to quit. He goes, yeah, but... He goes, you know, I got a little bit of time off. I got to go for that test. Now I hit the chronic a little bit, you know. It's become a lifestyle for people. My wife and I were in Oregon 2 years ago with Liliana. I remember stopping at a mom and pop gas station in the middle of nowhere in Oregon. And you walk in there and it's, you know the convenience store. It depends on where you're at. Some of them just have food and snacks and, you know, the occasional lottery ticket. And then the worst ones have the liquor bottles and, you know, the beer cave. And then it gets a little bit worse. They add all the tobacco products. And some of them have the pot paraphernalia. And, you know, they have all the, you know, the uppers and the downers and all the legalized speed pills, the endorphins and stuff like that. And the black magic pills and the sexual perversion section of the store. And there's usually some guy in a turban running the store because he has no conscience towards selling that filth to America. We get out there in Oregon and you walk in the front of the store and instead of hot dogs and fried chicken, they got a cannabis bar. And I mean, I'm not being funny. I mean, it's like, here's Jamaican red. You know, this is like some high altitude Mexican specialty weed here. And, you know, and they got the scales and the dude behind the counter, it looks like he'd been working there way too long. And he's like, hey, man, you know, and I was like, just getting gas, sir. Thank you. You know, and they just, there's so many convenience stores in America. How did it start? I guess somebody said, here, you got to try this. Here, you got to try this. Most of the music industry, that's what they've been telling people for years, through the music, through songs, through interviews. You got to try this. Who's funding the legalization of marijuana in these states? A lot of it is the music industry. Why? Because music's just better when you smoke. Not being funny. Who starts that? Somebody hands him a joint one day. Where does it end? Well, you either get born again or you struggle your whole life.
Yes, sir.
They say it's the gateway drug, but yet they sell the gateway drug in convenience stores in Oregon. All you got to do to get a prescription nowadays for it is just go tell the doctor your knees hurt or your elbow hurts. You go get a prescription. It's perfectly legal now. And America's stupefied with it.
Yep.
And a pastor friend of mine told me, he pulled up in the church parking lot not too long ago, and a man from his church, cab of his truck's filled with smoke, and he pulls up, the guy looks over, his eyes got this big, he raced out of the parking lot of the church. And it's not okay. You don't think right. Your mind's not right. How does it start? Because a friend. Subtle. They don't tell you the downside of it. They don't tell you that it doesn't satisfy. They don't tell you you've got to keep taking it, keep taking it, keep taking it. It's not just a once a week deal or maybe twice a week. They don't tell you that it gets in your system and you got to have it. It doesn't tell you. They don't tell you that, listen, it's going to lead you to more pills. It's going to lead you to more uppers and downers. And eventually you might find yourself in the pit of heroin or in crystal meth. And they don't tell you that eventually it's going to destroy your life. Why? Because it is the gateway. Neighborhood I grew up with, I know several parents that had their liquor cabinets that tell their sons, I mean, don't you ever touch this. You keep your filthy hands out of this cabinet. But every night, mom and dad are in there sucking off the bottle, drinking the dew of the devil every night. What are those children going to do when they come of age? What are they going to do when mom finally relaxes a little bit, lets up a little bit? What are they going to do when mom's gone, working all day? What are they going to do during the day? They're going to go in the liquor cabinet and do what their parents do. And what are they going to do? They say, hey, friends, look what we got. We can be like the big people now. And we'll have the good life. I've always marveled at the ads and the, and I don't know about you, you know, some of you know my testimony and the, you know, I came out of the basically the military party scene is what I got saved out of. So you got pee tested, so you had to be careful. But, you know, half the dudes in the army were dropping LSD. You go to a party and they'd just be sitting there rocking back and forth, staring at the wall for 30 hours. That's what they came out of. You go and you buy a case of beer with your last dollar. Why? Because everybody else is doing it. The pressure's there. You got to party. You got to fit in. You got to do it. What does it do? It leads to drunkenness. What does drunkenness do? It destroys your soul.
Yes, sir.
Drunk can't think right. A drunk can't even do right. You find yourself with perverse women, perverse men, strangers, spewing in your glory, your hair is filled with vomit. Find yourself beaten and bloody and not know why. Why? Because you got drunk. Why? Because some friend said, hey, this is the right thing. This is the cool thing. This is the fun thing. I saw the advertisements. The balmy beaches, the beautiful women. Man, this is the life. But you go to the bar on Friday night, and you see these people sitting at the bar. Ask them, is this the life?
Yeah.
Is this what they promised you? Is this what the ads promised? Is this life? Sitting on a bar still hoping that ugly woman at the end of the bar speaks to you? Because you become a drunk and you have no friends and you have no family and everybody's forsaking you because of your drunkenness and all you want is somebody to talk to. Where does it start? A subtle friend. A subtle friend. You got to try this. Just try this. We'll talk real plain talk. Some of you, it'll go over your head. Thank the Lord for it. You ought to run the aisles over it. Go thank God for it. They came out with this wine coolers about the time I hit the party scene. We beat people up for having them. Men didn't drink them. Why? They were for the girls. What is it? It's this little sweet, bubbly, about tastes like soda, and it's got a kick to it. Who drank them? Teenage girls. Who got abused? Teenage girls. Who passed out and threw up in the pool? Teenage girls. Who got DWIs on the way home? Teenage girls. Why? Because they had this sweet little bubbly drink. Oh, it's so delicious. It's so wonderful. Everybody's drinking it. What? I remember in eighth grade, the girls was talking about, you know, oh, you got to try this wine cooler. Oh, you got to, I'm talking about eighth grade now. You're listening. Eighth grade. You got to try this wine cooler. You got to try. And the parents are so naive. I don't think that's going on in school today. Well, what's 30 years ago? You think things have gotten better? You think things have gotten better? I got the newspaper clipping at home of an 11-year-old girl that was forced by the state of Maryland to abort her baby because she willfully, and I'm talking about willfully, 11 years old, willfully laid with a man and was with child. He was underage. The state of Maryland forced her to terminate her baby, kill her baby. You know what said in the article? They were drinking together. Are we still that naive? Are people still that dense? Are people so foolish they don't think it's going on? It can't happen to my children. It won't happen to my children. If we took a poll in here, how many young people in here have put that bottle to their lips? Some of you parents would probably be at the altar in tears. Mm-hmm. But you're naive. How many young people in here have picked up a joint of marijuana and sucked on it with their lips? And again, parents go, oh, not my children. Oh, not mine. Oh, no. I heard a preacher years ago, he said, you will become what your friends are. You will become what your friends are. You hang around vermin, you'll become vermin. You hang around swine, you'll become swine. You hang around God's people, his chance might become God's people.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jesus.
Where does it start? With a friend. Someone that's subtle. Someone lying in wait. Where does music start? I want to say this about music. It doesn't take a friend. It just takes an ear for music. All it takes is getting your ear. It'll hook you. I'm going to date myself just a little bit. Some of you just look naive and thank God for it. I remember when Chicago 17 came out. That's how boring music used to be. And everybody had to have the album. And my mom forbid it. I thank God my mom forbid. We listened to that filth. I'd listen to the radio under my covers, little transistor radio with an earpiece in, and that's an old radio used to buy before MP3 players. I'd put that thing in my ear, and I'd just be waiting to hear Chicago on the radio. And I'd hear it, and I'd go get my sister, and we'd listen to that thing on the earbud. You know what it did? It just hooked. It was subtle. Little love messages. You know, little feel good. Pop ditties, and you know, it just felt good. Can I just say to you, that transformed the next couple of years. Kind of got out of the realm of pop a little bit. I mean, we got away from that, started getting into more heavy metal and death metal, and you know, and then eventually, I wasn't real picky. I was telling somebody the other night, I said, I got into country music, bluegrass. I'd listen to country music and heavy metal in the same cycle on my CD player. You say, what's wrong with country music? Oh, it's out of hell. They say, how do you know somebody quits listening to country music? Well, the dog comes back, the wife comes back, they stop drinking. It's out of the same hell. But let's go ahead and say this since we're here. That good Christian Dolly Parton, good godly girl, grew up singing in Sunday school. We know some of her family. You know, some of her cousins, preachers. I talk about Bible-believing preachers. Some of you know Brother David Carver, some of her cousins grew up singing at church with her. She sang at Shady Grove when she was a little girl. Her and her family would come there and sing at Shady Grove long before Brother Carver was around. Old Dolly would go there. They said she was always an entertainer. She's a profane woman. vile woman, loves money, has displayed herself as a harlot and prepopulated herself with little innuendos and little perverse talks and talking about her appearance and her figure and all that dirty talk for all of these years. And even her own cousins will say she's a wicked woman. Maybe says, oh, she's a Christian. She grew up in church. Singing all these little pretty little songs. A lot of them grew up in church singing songs.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Till they sold their soul. What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? They said Hugh Hefner once offered, I'm talking real plain now, but Hugh Hefner offered Dolly Parton, I think, $2 million she'd pose in his magazine. And the rumor was that they didn't have a fire hose big enough to airbrush it. Millions of dollars. I'm talking about the truth now. That's what they said. They said they couldn't. She said, she herself said, I'm old enough, you can't hide my flaws, and I'm not going to get in there. He offered her million. You know, the fact that she'd even entertain that. Her husband should have walked over and smacked Hugh Hefner in the mouth and headbutted him a couple times.
Yes, sir.
Just shows you the character. And then people ride down the road listen to that garbage in their vehicles. You see, it starts so innocent, little songs and, you know, happy-go ditties. And, you know, the first album to come out is always kind of upbeat pop music, you know, and then it gets into the filth and the garbage and the sex and the perversion and the dope. And people just fill their minds with it. They fill their minds with it. I just go to those concerts. I'm not a fool. You don't find God's people at those venues. You don't find God's people showing up there. How does it start? Subtlety. As a Cracker Barrel, some of you heard me tell the story. I was with Brother Herbert many years ago. We're at a Cracker Barrel down south. I mean, sunrise. It's like 6 in the morning. We had to wait for Cracker Barrel to open. I was traveling with Brother Herbert. We go to Cracker Barrel, we're sitting there, and I'm not noticing a thing. And all of a sudden, he just slams his hand on the table and says, I can't take it anymore. I said, what is he? I feel like getting Sister Williamson to go and dance it. I said, what? He's like, the music. I wasn't paying a lick of attention to it. But she is that old country western he grew up on back in the 60s, early 70s. It was bothering. You know why? Once that stuff gets in you, it's hard to get it out.
Yes, sir.
Yep. If you started playing a tune, I could sing probably every word of some of the songs I used to know. Every word. Or I'd be like I do in church. I'd act like I know the words and just mumble a couple of them. Oh, you know, watermelon. You know how hard it is to memorize scripture? You know how hard it is to memorize good, godly music? But see, that's where it's subtle. Yet again, naive parents, naive Christians. It's harmless. It's okay. It's safe. It's fine. Promoting drinking, promoting adultery, promoting oftentimes sexuality, perversion, even sodomy, promoting death, promoting killing. And it's not just the hip-hop industry. It's across the board.
Yes, sir.
Why? Because they're trying to defile our young people. I count on one hand as many times the last 10 years I've heard somebody deal with the issue of music. And I think a couple of the times was here with Brother Knickerbocker. The other times probably Pastor Black. They don't want to say anything about it because their children are listening to it. The Christian contemporary movement's nothing more than glorified rock music. It's all that is. It just has so-called Jesus lyrics, but they're so generic that a Catholic, a Mormon, a Jehovah's Witness, they could sing them. Because there'd be an agreement with them. God is love. God is love. The Buddhists can say God is love. I want to know more about God. I want to know more about God. I mean, the Hindu could sing that. But it's raging through churches. It's raging through people's lives. Why? Because it's subtle. It must be Christian. I don't know how many people have made a statement. You know, and I used to watch some of that on TV and listen to some of it. And that the whole Bill Gaither, he got on TV and made enough money and he started propagating the music. And my mom would say, I mean, other people would say, see, you know, there's one or two good songs on that CD, but I just skipped the rest of them. I said, what do they do? They're trying to attract every crowd they can. Why? There's huge money in Christian music.
Sure is.
Last I checked, he's worth between $15 and $18 million. Selling Christian music. Selling videos, going around filming the world and going all over the world singing and propagating. And what? It's a big coming together. You know what they call that? What do they call it? Somebody help me. Unity. We're all in unity together. They wouldn't be in unity here tonight. But what they do is they point the finger and say, oh, he's the one. He's blaspheming. What he's talking about. Listen, that's terrible. That's judgmental. He doesn't need to be judging. But I've watched young people start with contemporary music, and it doesn't take long when they're in rock and roll and country music. It doesn't take long when they're out of church. I've never known a spiritual person listening to contemporary music. Never.
Exactly right.
I've never known a young man that wasn't a rebel that had long hair. Never. It's a shame for a man to have long hair. And I'm not talking about COVID-19 because you can't get a haircut. I'm talking about a rebel. It's a sign of one. It's a shame for him to have long hair. Well, you know how he is. Yeah, I know how he is. He's showing you how he is. It's no different than the woman at the doctor's office goes and chops her hair off. Trying to fit in. Why? You go there. She's angry with you because you're a man. It's obvious. No man's going to rule over her. No man's going to, you know, let be under her authority. So what does she do? She spikes her hair, looks like a man, treats like a man, but she's married to a man. Why? Rebellion. Where does it start? It starts with somebody. It starts with a friend. It starts with somebody introduced you to this idea that all men are pigs. Go through one bad marriage, and what happens? All men are pigs. Well, you might have married the pig of the earth. It could be you need to have more sense than that. You know how women are. You hear that statement. You know how women are. Yeah, I know how my woman is. She's soft, squishy, tender, loving. I like her. I know how your woman is. She may not be like that. You say, Brother Vernon, Michael, listen, I told him the other day, I told him, I said, these guys want to marry these weightlifters, these athletic women. I said, forget all that mess. No. I'm telling you the truth now. A woman's stronger than me. You know why? She might think she's in charge. Just speaking the truth now. So worried about getting in shape. Now, you ought to know it's just a long night. It's going to get longer. But hang in there. They want a woman going to get in shape. What does that mean? Round is a shape, is it not? Amen. Just throwing that out. You know what that means? I want people to notice me. You want to lose weight, that's fine. For health reasons, you want to cut some pounds, hey, thank God for it. But to get in shape means you're looking for somebody to look at you. A godly woman has no business wanting men to look at her.
Amen.
That's where we are. Why? We're listening to the wrong people. The subtle of heart trying to destroy our ladies through propaganda, through bullying, through the press, through entertainment. Listen, it didn't just start in the 70s. It started long before that. The strong woman putting the man down, insulting the man. Making him seem every sitcom I ever watched, she was always the strong woman. He was the bumbling fool and the idiot. And I'd sit there like a fool and watch all that trash. And the children come in and disrespect the dad. And the mom encourages it. And then people think that's just a normal life. And they think that's the way to grow up. And they wonder why the divorce rate's in the 65% now. Because women think that's the normal thing. Is you're in charge. You run the man. You insult the man. You tear him down. And a real man can't put up with that. But they do. I've had women cut me off screaming at me. Screaming at me. in their vehicle because I did something. One woman, unknowingly, she pulled up beside me, laying on the horn, cursing, screaming. Well, we get up, the traffic stopped. There's a Highway 20 in Lexington. Traffic came to a stop. She's right next to me. I just put the passenger window down, the Camry, looked at her till she put her window down and said, "Lady, you need to go home to your husband." And she cursed me. I'm not being funny. I'm telling you the truth. A lady one day attacked me in Walmart, was beating on my windshield with her fist, and I never did figure out why. I had done something. I must have cut her off, drive. I have no idea. I have no idea why she was so angry with me. And I just sort of back out of the space trying to get away from her. And I realized there's a guy standing at the back of the car. He's with her. I didn't speak a word to her. I'll just go ahead and say it. It's okay. It's going out. It's all right.
Yes, sir.
I just said, "Buddy, she's going to get you killed one day." I said, "You better shut her mouth."
Yes, sir.
I mean, she was dynamite. Screaming, ranting. He just hung his head. God help a man like that. Where's that come from? It's because it's been a subtle influence for all of these years. It's the destruction of the home, destruction of families, destruction of men, destruction of women, destruction of children. The strong woman, the wimpy man, the children run the home. There's no discipline. They have no idea who's actually in charge. So nobody's in charge. You know what it does? It just trickles through our lives. We become immune to it. We become hardened to it. Can I say sometimes it almost becomes natural? You know what the average American does? They watch television. If they say young people, school-aged children, the average school-aged children watches 5 hours of television a day. Imagine how much they're watching during these days. Just imagine. They learn it from mom and dad. The average man gets home, he puts his feet up, he eats a microwave dinner, he eats carry out. He watches television. It's time to go to bed. He goes to bed. He gets up. He goes to work. Comes home. He watches television. Why? Because that's what we do.
Yeah.
I don't think God's people have a place in that. Why? Because the influence is so strong. So you watch the news. What is the news? Well, how it all has a slant to it. What is it? It's anti-God. It's anti-Christ. You watch the talk shows. What are they? Well, just people on there trying to get rich. We love watching people win money. I like watching people get rich. Doesn't bother me. And what do we watch? We watch some sitcoms. We watch a murder mystery. What do we see? Vulgarity, profanity, scantily clad women, indecency, immorality, sodomites pumped right into our living room. Do we say anything about it? No, we're silent. Why? Because we're sitting there watching it. We're absorbing it. We're taking it in. It's subtle. It's for your soul, but you don't know it. It's trying to destroy you, but you don't know it. I want to be real clear about this. The one joy of modern technology is if you do want to watch something entertaining, you can pick and choose what you watch. But you better pick wisely. If you're going to watch something, you better pick wisely. You better use some sense. You better monitor what your children watch. You better monitor what your family watches. Why? Because out there are friends. Any way they can, they're trying to get to them. Any way they can, they're trying to get a hold of them. Any way they can, they're going to induce them to anything wicked they can get their hands on. Again, don't raise your hands. I wouldn't want to do that to any of us. How many are introduced to pornography at a young age? How many are introduced to pornography young? Family member? Uncle? Friend? Include that, cousins? Hey, look at this. Hey, look at this. It's subtle. You'll like this. Teenage boy, of course he likes that. All the things he's been curious about all these years have now suddenly come to light in front of him. He's pubescent. He sees it. He lusts. He wants more of it. Where does it stop? Where does it stop? Why is it that we have numbers like over 50% in churches? 50% of men in the last, 30 days have viewed pornography. Some estimate even higher, and that's supposed to be in pretty, you know, conservative churches, possibly maybe a King James Bible, but they're more conservative. That survey done some 15 years ago, Way of Life published it years ago, went to the different fundamental Bible colleges, and they started asking questions, and they started surveying young people in those Bible colleges, and it comes out something like 65% of the young men admitted to having looked at pornography, and like 35% of the girls had admitted looking at the pornography. And the best, what they said were best Bible colleges in America. Why? Friend? Subtle? Nobody goes up and says, hey, I want to show you something, but listen, this is going to destroy you. This is going to mess up your conscience. This is going to make you dream. This is going to bother you to the day you die. This is going to affect you. This is going to affect your marriage. This is going to affect your life. This is going to wound you. This is going to destroy you. Nobody walks up and tells you the honesty about it.
That's right.
And they say, hey, look at this. I'd be silly to think it hasn't affected people in here. I'd be silly to think it isn't still affecting people in here. It's too accessible. It's too troublesome. It's too available. I'm about done with Fox News. I don't know where else to get my news. Even the Fox 43, the local news station, they'll link to Fox News and some model, you know, some celebrity, never even heard of it. You know, during the lockdown, you know, she's modeling her bikini. What's the temptation? The common temptation which is taking, which is common to man, what is it? Talk about it. What is it? It's to look. Why? Because most have looked before. Once you look, it's easy to look again.
Yeah, that's right. Come on.
It gets easier and easier to look again. How does it start? Because someone with subtleness comes and says, look, here's the plan. I know your parents look at your phone, but hey, look, I got this old phone. Look, you get on Wi-Fi and look at it on this. What's your son doing at night? What are your children doing at night? What do they have access to at night? Better lock that Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So you better lock that Wi-Fi.
Yes, sir.
That's where we are. Subtle men have crept in. Subtle women have crept in. And they're trying to destroy our soul. Proverbs 7. Third use of the word subtle. Final use in the Bible of the word subtle. S-U-B-T-I-L, subtle. In verse 6 of Proverbs 7, for at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. Passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house. You know what I thought about when I've read this before, I've said it many times. The man looking out the window knew what she was just by watching her. But because he was simple, he didn't know what she was. Because of his simplicity, He was a simple one. He was a youth. He didn't know what she was. And as I beheld him and I watched him, and he passed through the street near her corner, he went the way to her house. In verse 9, in the twilight, in the evening, the black and dark night. Men love darkness rather than light. Why? Because their deeds are evil. Why do boys pick girls up at 8, 9 o'clock? Because it's dark. Behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot. What does that mean? Her clothing identified what she was. The subtle of heart. It was in her heart to do him wrong. It was in her heart to destroy him. She didn't announce her intentions. She wasn't licking her chops and grunting and smiling and going, come on, big boy. I mean, no, she was subtle. The way about her is what made him fall. She's loud. Write that down, young men. And stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Take note of that verse. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offered with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I was looking for you. I wanted to see you. And because he was simple, you know, he's just goo-goo and gushing and, you know, oh, she was looking for me. And he doesn't have enough sense to know that she said that to every man she saw that day. But she caught him. Why does the Bible say to flee fornication? Because if you don't, it'll catch you. If you don't flee it, it's going to catch you. And once it catches you,
yes, sir,
it'll destroy you.
Yes, sir.
God. She's subtle of heart. She doesn't announce her intentions. Can I say this? I've seen women over the years lure a man for money, for a place to stay, for a car, for jewelry. But I've seen them lure a man just to destroy him. I had a friend growing up, and he was my friend. And I was a bad influence on him, and he was a bad influence on me. He was one of those guys, he just had this propensity for hurt and wounded women. And he'd see one, and listen, she wasn't really hurting, but in a bar, that's the story she tells. Oh, my husband, how he treats me. And he'd put on his gallant knight suit and his helmet, and he'd pick up his sword, and he'd throw her on his horse, and they'd dash off into the night. And it destroyed him. It ruined him. Why? Because he thought he was doing good. He thought he was going to do right. The damsel in distress. Let's flip-flop that real quick. You know how many young ladies I've seen destroyed because they think they can help a young man? I can help him. Nobody else has ever helped him, but I'm going to be me, whose life is so messed up and so dysfunctional, but I am going to help him. You know how many young ladies have said, I'll get him off alcohol. I'll get him off the bottle. I'll get him out of drugs. I'll change him. In 6 months, she hates him. Trapped in his life, trapped in his home, trapped in a marriage, trapped with children. And she hates that man. Why? Because the subtlety of a man and a woman is never revealed. The motives are never revealed until it's too late. A young man that can woo a woman and talk, and he'll use his words to swoo her. And I've watched men for years wait for a girl. And just like Amnon, as soon as they got what they wanted, they kicked her aside, cursed her, and walked away. I've seen him wait for years. She caught him. She's going to destroy him. And he has no idea what she's about to do. He thinks she came there for him. She goes on, tells what all she's done. Verse 18, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. And then she goes on, says, for the goodman is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He had taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. And here it is, with her much fair speech, she caused him to yield with the flattering of her lips. She forced him. He goeth her after straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and he knoweth not that it is for his life. What is a liver shot? Slow death. Slow death. Those of you that deer hunt, you liver shoot a deer. As soon as you see that arrow go low, you groan because you know you're walking. You're walking, buddy. Bruiser Brody, the great wrestler, was in Puerto Rico and got stabbed in the shower. The doctors came out and they told some of the other wrestlers, and we'd heard the story, and they came out and they said, you know, we were able to, you know, get the lung healed, closed up and reinflate the lung. And we got the artery where it's nicked. It's sewn up. They said, but it nicked the liver. And he may not make it. And one guy said, what do you mean it nicked? It just nicked the liver. And the doctor was incredulous. Well, don't you know? It hit the liver. He's probably not going to make it. Just that much. This is a dart through his liver. He'll go on for a couple weeks, maybe years. But he's mortally wounded and doesn't know it. Who's done that to him? This harlot. The woman that laid wait for him, the woman that caught him. It's for his life. She didn't tell him it was for his life. He thought he'd enjoy a little bit of sin for a season. He thought he'd find the pleasure of sin. He thought he'd find pleasure in this woman. I mean, she'd adorned her bed with tapestries and the sweet odors and all of these things. I mean, he was ready for a good time, for a long night. Let's have our fill of love until the morning, our solace of love. And I mean, this is going to be a wonderful and a marvelous thing. And he left her house with a fatal wound. Why? Because she was subtle of heart. And can I say this? She's destroyed a lot of them. Just like Jonadab's destroyed many. Yes. Yes. Why do you have the problems you have? The serpents beguiled you. Jonah said, Jonadab has guided you. And a woman's deceived you. One of the greatest mistakes a man can make is start a sentence like this: she sure is pretty. If only you had a fast forward on life, you'd get over that real quick. Dear Brother Albert Hardin, when his wife was still living, he said one time, he said, boys, you marry a girl because she's pretty. He said, I promise you two things. She's going to get fat and she's going to get ugly. And his wife just laughed. She's looking at those young girls laughing at him. They're all going, ha, not me, not me. You realize that's the only criteria for most men? It destroys them. Criteria for a young lady is about just as dumb. I mean, young ladies, they get married to guys that don't have jobs. Unbelievable. I mean, I'm being unbelievable.
Sure.
Love will make it happen. Has anybody in here ever just made it on love? Anybody? Besides me and my wife, I mean. No. Why? It's not enough. There's this thing called life, it's reality. Yet people are looking for so many other things and so many other avenues, and they're getting advice from all the fools in their life, and they're getting advice from their peers and their friends, and rather than seeking God's advice.
Yes.
I learned dealing with young people many years ago. Who do they go to for advice? Their friends. So what do? They dress like their friends. They talk like their friends. They change their hair color like their friends. They put nose rings in like their friends. They put toe rings on like their friends. They wear the same jewelry as their friends, the same fashion as their friends. They want to wear pants like their friends and shorts like their friends and bikinis like their friends and underwear like their friends. They want to be their friends.
That's right.
Rather than be what God wants them to be.
Yes.
You know who'll be the greatest friend you'll ever have? If you'll let him. There is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. He'll not lead you astray. He's not subtle. He's up front with it, everything.
Thank you, Jesus. Yes.
So often people act like we're this cult, you know, this deceitful thing, this awful hidden thing. Yet we're on Facebook. We're on onesoulatatime.net. We meet in an open building with open doors and open windows, and anybody's welcome to come. There's no secrets.
That's right.
But yet the same people have so many secrets in their life that they would repulse to ever have revealed. And they accuse us of being secretive. No, this is all in the up and up. You know what Jesus Christ wants to do? Get the secrets out of your life.
Yeah.
He wants to get the hidden things out of your life and bring them to the light. Get the garbage out of your life and bring it to the light. Are you subtle? Are you upfront and honest with people?
Yes.
You upfront and honest with young ladies, men? Are you upfront and honest with men, young ladies? You upfront in business? You upfront with people? You have that subtle heart. It'll destroy you. It'll ruin you. I would say this, I'm not being foolish, I'm just being honest, the Lord protected me. The only reason I never got in the drug scene, I'm convinced, is because of that little cup. And my commander was convinced I was on drugs. Every month, randomly, we had two tests in our unit every month. One of them was McVeigh, every month. For 6 months, it was me and Pete Bycombe. I couldn't figure that one out. Pete, I don't know if you had ever listened, but if you're listening, I hope you are. You know why? She knew we were on drugs. She told the chief that. I know McVeigh's on drugs. Every month, I had to walk in there. Okay, here we go again. One day, I stopped her. She's walking by me. I said, ma'am. I said, I've never used drugs. She goes, kept walking. The reason she knew that is because everybody I knew did. Except for the military people, all my friends did. One of my best friends coming up is my tag team partner, Dave. Last time I saw him, he just fried. I mean, he just shakes and his lip quivers and he stutters when he talks. And I mean, he just fried himself. One of the good friends is an evangelist's son. Just destroyed his life with drugs. Destroyed his brain with drugs. Destroyed himself with perversion and filthiness and ungodliness and wretchedness. What I have seen, the few times I've seen the last 15 years, I've tried to speak to him, he's mocked and scoffed and made fun. The young man I talked about earlier is my good friend, his cousin. The one I've talked about here before, 39 years old, sat in a chair and said, I'm not getting out of this chair. And he drank until he died. Sat in a chair, died drunk. Last time I saw him, he cursed me. He cursed me, made fun of me, mocked me, called me a blankety-blanking preacher. He cursed me in my face. And looking back, the awful thing is so many of them had influence over me. So many of them had sway over me. If I hadn't had a commander that made me pee in a cup every month, I'm not trying to be crude, just being honest, what else do you call it? Might have destroyed me too.
Sure.
Subtle. Who are your friends? Who are your family? Who are your influences? What are you doing in secret? What are you doing when nobody's looking? What are you doing when nobody's around? I've heard this pastor of this church say many times, that's what you really are. I made a statement down in Blaine, Pennsylvania back in November, the youth night on Saturday night. I made a statement concerning the hypocrisy, and a church decided to misquote me, blatantly misquote me, put it out on the internet. They didn't say my name, but that anybody that was there would know that's exactly what they were talking about. And they took little pot shots and some little cheap shots out on the internet. And that's, so be it. That's just what it is. But you know what it was? It's about being this hypocritical life and having a double life. And they didn't like that. So they decided that they'd just go ahead and try to misquote what I said and make it look like I'm some kind of, overbearing preacher and some kind of bully pulpit, and I'm going to make people live a certain way because I don't like the way people live. And, they just tried to twist all the words around. But the reality is they don't like the part about being a hypocrite. There's a lot of people who don't like that part about being a hypocrite. A little double life. Fanny Crosby, Jesus in one hand, the world in the other. What is the world? The pressure, the influence, being popular, being liked, being successful, being known as being successful, being known as a person of confidence or a person of stature, a person of abilities, just all the pride of life. But what do we need? We need Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Thank you all. Thank you for being here. Brother John, would you close us in prayer?
Father, I thank you for what we've heard.